Before the 70s, Hollywood filmmakers had a real air of regality around them, and they were kind of an untouchable artist. And when the 70s came in, late 60s came in, blue-collar storytelling kind of hit the forefront. And Walter Hill wasn't among the first wave of those guys, but he certainly caught on to that and rode with it and crafted it into something that became even more palatable and digestible for the audiences. I mean, obviously, his most iconic hit is The Warriors, and that is a movie that is just about broke-ass people having intense difficulties and fighting against incredible odds. But all of his movies kind of feature that same focus, which is people that have no right to succeed, just powering forward, whether or not they fail. And he's amazing in doing that. And I think a lot of that comes from the fact that, I guess his most popular quote that you see written anywhere is him saying, every movie I've made is a Western. And it's because he just likes to tell the story of filthy people having a terrible time. And he does it with sympathy, he does it with honesty, and he does it with violence. And those are three things that I appreciate in any movie.
I got Sticks stuck in my head now because you were listening to it when I walked in here.
I was not listening to Sticks. I don't want that out there on Domo, the record. Domo. I don't want people thinking that was happening. Domo. I hate prog rock.
Domo arigato, Mr. Nate Adams.
I was listening to John Carpenter's Lost Themes.
It's no.
Just a nice, moody record to put on when you're sitting around. Trying to have a pleasant evening.
Sounds and bleeps. He was getting ready to go into the I Am Kilroy part. I know that song.
Just show some goddamn respect.
Dennis DeYoung.
The man made John Carpenter's Ghosts of Mars, and he demands your fucking respect.
Yeah, he also played at Tom and Space Hog Skaronski's parents' prom. Dennis DeYoung.
Okay, we're off on a bad start here. I'm getting irritated.
Ah, agree to disagree. We're not here to talk about music. We're here to talk about action movies. Ain't that right?
I mean, sometimes there's movies and action movies, and you talk about the music. And
yeah, that's true. Well, right now, though,
it's the joy of filmmaking. It's such a wonderful marriage of sight and sound.
Sight and sound.
Yeah, I think there's a magazine called that somewhere.
It's an erotic magazine. This is an erotic podcast, and it's called Baby Oil and Blow.
Yeah.
It's not for the faint of heart.
No.
If you hate the fuck word, get the fuck out.
You see a baby listening to this, slap their phone right out of their hand.
We are the Deadwood of podcasts, as in we average 93 fucks an episode. Yeah. Only to be rivaled by Deadwood.
I mean, I really noticed it last week when we were podcasting drunk.
Yeah, oh yeah, when the booze is flowing.
Way too many F-words getting thrown around, and I was just like, oh man, no wonder people don't want me around their children ever.
Yeah,
you can't just go around talking like that.
Yeah, and we're usually drunk, so
we're
going to be talking like
but
that.
But to be fair, I usually don't go out in public unless it's the middle of the night, so.
That's true.
If your kids hear some errant fuck words because I'm around, that's probably your fault.
That's your fault.
Take
for
them
taking
home.
Them to Walmart.
Get
while
them to
Nate's
bed.
There at midnight. Getting Walmart shit.
Shuffling around, muttering the fuck word to myself.
Oh boy, it is Baby Oil and Blow, an action extravaganza. We are your hosts. Mm-hmm. It's me, Matt O. Mm-hmm. With me, as always, who should you be? You can be the swearinger to my bullock. You are cool. Nate Adams.
Ahoy, ahoy, everybody. I just wanted to also be on the record. I haven't been in a Walmart in years. Fuck the Walton family and fuck Sticks.
He's a Myers man.
This is all shit that you white people like.
Nate's a Myers man.
I'm not on board with any of it. So I take it from all of your Deadwood references that you've watched that Deadwood movie that dropped on HBO this weekend.
Bro, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Like I was going to wait?
What'd you think of that?
I loved it. gave me the ending finally. That's true. You know, it wasn't without its flaws, but it's a movie to wrap up a show from 10 years ago.
By flaws, so. Do you mean CG trains?
Yeah.
Because that was my biggest complaint coming out of it. Those terrible looking CG trains in the opening scene.
I mean, it was never going to be a great movie.
How much does it cost to get just a real fucking train and film it?
Well, it was a set. They couldn't put it on the set, the Deadwood set.
Oh, jeez. You can't have one location shot to film a fucking train or pull some fucking stock footage of a train down some tracks.
I didn't
care. You know how many fucking westerns have been filmed that they got to have access to?
I don't care. It's satisfied me for ending wise. Mm-hmm. And then the only other thing I cared was that it wasn't, you know, you get these reboots or these one last things
all over the place.
And a lot of times it's just too, I don't know, too wink and nudge. Like, this is what you wanted.
Man, I hate that
this
shit.
This is what you wanted. And I didn't feel like that
nostalgia
at all. Just
throwbacks.
Movie.
Yeah, I didn't really, I can't think of a single one where I was just like, oh, they're pandering. They're playing all the greatest hits.
But like, at the same time, they pandered because you got Bullock and you got like some classic Swearingen, but it wasn't pandering. It was when it happened, you were like, fuck yeah, this is why I loved that.
I think it was 100% pandering the whole movie because instead of like having any sort of realistic depiction of what Deadwood would be like 10 years later, they're just like, it's still everything's the same as it was at the end of season 3, and we're just going to do the ending of season 3 you didn't get to see. Here you go.
Either way.
Just like every character is like in the exact same place, doing the exact same thing. Nobody's changed in any way.
I was thrilled that they were able to sneak our boy Garrett Dillahunt.
Oh, yeah. Third character.
Yeah.
Deadwood legend.
Who else has
played three characters on a show? God damn.
Yeah. That's some range there, pal.
Yeah, I thought it took a while there trying to get all the pieces back in place so they could do the exact same ending they were meaning to do for season 3.
Yeah.
But once they got to that ending, I was pretty into it, man.
Again, it was
pretty into that ending.
It was a flawed system to begin with. They had a lot dealt against them. And I thought, given the chicken shit, they made chicken salad.
Yeah, they pulled it off. This was no Arrested Development comeback or God, I can't even think of how many things they've tried to bring back years later now, and they've all been awful. Yeah. Just awful.
Yeah. Again, I'm speaking in vague generalities. I don't want to spoil anything for anybody if they haven't watched it.
I was going to say, all the women still looking real great. Most of the men in the cast looking like dog shit, dude. Yeah. Straight up dog shit.
Maria voted across the board that white people don't age well.
Well, that's just a racist thing to say.
I was like, well, so
Trixie was glowing in her wedding dress.
Yeah, I thought she looked pretty good still.
And she's been on a long, hard road, man.
Yeah.
She's been through a lot of shit, that whore.
Calamity Jane looked pretty good.
Oh, yeah. For 10 more years of drinking?
She kept going hard on Joni Stubbs' Sandra Bullock neck.
That's kind of rough.
Yeah.
But maybe a fair statement.
Maybe fair. Deadwood's a thing.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not what we're
Deadwood's
here to talk
over
about.
Now. We're not here to talk about the past. We're here to talk
about another past. Also starts with a D.
We're talking about The Driver this week.
No, The Driver. I said it starts with a D.
We could drop the T. That's what they do in the card catalog when you're looking through the library.
That's true.
Never before in the history of motion pictures has there been a screen presence so commanding, so powerful, so deadly. He's Conan the Librarian.
Can you tell me where I can find a book on astronomy?
Don't you know the Dewey Decimal System?
Conan the Librarian.
I'm sorry. These books are a little overdue.
Conan the Librarian.
Tonight, only on U62.
I'm sorry.
This week's the first week of our big fucking theme month, man. A Hill to Die On, Volume 1, the early films of Walter Hill.
What?
So, get ready. We're going to be talking about Walter Hill a lot. He's a Southern California boy, that Walter Hill.
Yeah.
Did some manual labor as a tyke, and then eventually got into the movies. He was farting around assistant directing shit.
Mm-hmm.
He worked on Bullet.
He did.
He wrote a Sam Peckinpah movie, The Getaway, which is real good. I'd probably like to talk about sometime. Then he had a first movie. It was Hard Times. It's got a real cool, just like a... On paper, it sounds real great. It's just like, hey, it's a Depression-era boxing movie with Charles Bronson, but it's actually kind of dry when you watch it. So I was like, well, let's not watch that dry movie. Let's skip to a second movie for our first deal. We've got The Driver right here. This is
next week we go
1978.
Next week we go straight into Alien 3.
Straight into another 48 hours.
It's not sequel. Alien 3?
No, not Alien 3.
Oh.
This movie came out in 1978. We'll get into the rundown here.
Okay.
The rundown this week brought to us by the Andy Sidaris movie Malibu Express.
Ooh.
Which is maybe one of the most boob-filled action films
of all
time.
Meet Cody Abilene, a private eye with an adoring public. He's an undercover operator.
Hi, I'm May, and this is my friend Faye.
With a knack for getting at the bare facts. This is the Countess, a government agent with her own special skills. And together, they're both headed for danger on the Malibu Express.
This is Kingy.
In the world of high rollers, low blows, and dangerous curves, Cody's playing a deadly new game.
Go ahead, make my day.
Sorry, babe, but I gotta have some water.
The FBI wants him back.
No one should suspect anything.
I'm gonna nail him with a grenade.
The Russians want him dead, and the girls from the yacht next door just want him.
I understand you're a private investigator.
And Cody Abilene always gets his girl.
Marvelous.
So park your car, hide your guns, and lock up your daughters. Cody Abilene just got another case. He's hard to catch.
You are continental.
Hard to keep.
Let's scoot your butts outside.
Hard to figure. And impossible to resist. Starring Sybil Danning, Darby Hinton, and five Playboy Playmates.
I didn't just bring you in for sex. I have a few things to fill you in on.
Make tracks for the Malibu Express. No matter where you're headed, it goes all the way.
Would I help any woman in distress? Yes, ma'am, I would.
It's for sale for $7 on Blu-ray right now on Amazon, so...
Whoa, that's a steal.
I just tweeted it a couple minutes ago, so go find that link, get to Amazon, and scoop that up for $7, because I'm talking like these are early 80s floppy tan line boobs. We're not talking late 80s, early 90s rock hard fake-os.
Yeah, that would be a hard ticket to Hawaii where you start getting that.
Yeah, slipping in there, and then after that, every Andy Sidaris movie is just nothing but rock hard, gigantic, perfectly round tits.
Malibu Express is still
great. I'm a traditionalist. I like Malibu Express the best.
Detective Cody Abilene.
Gotta get that flopping.
He's a man's man. He's a great cop. And then not only that, you get the what family?
Oh, the family of hillbillies. Yeah. They're always trying to race him. Yeah, I forget their name, but
keep presenting to you like that they're famous and you should know
what,
them.
What A-level comic relief.
Yeah, it's,
that subplot going on in that movie.
It's a dynamite movie. Check it out.
Add that to all the other plots and you got a film. 1978, The Driver. This was a small budget. This was like $4 million I've seen estimated. Very small.
Okay.
Still did not make its budget back, man.
Ooh.
Walter Hill's on record saying that this movie made $0 in the United States. I don't see how that's possible, but he seems pretty bitter about it. Nobody saw this movie other than maybe press screenings, and nobody who saw it in press screenings liked it. It was a huge, huge failure.
They said it was an art house film, Nate.
Art house film full of car chases. Right up my alley. Our director is Walter Hill, as we said. This is his second movie. We move on there because we're going to be talking a lot about Walter Hill. Let's get into the stars. The stars of this movie. Ryan O'Neill is the title character, the driver.
Didn't he touch his daughter?
He was in a Paper Moon with his daughter Tatum O'Neal. And they were made for a great on-screen duo. I didn't sense any creepiness between them. If he's got a history of touching his daughter, this is not one I'm aware of. Tatum O'Neal did some fucked up shit when she became a teenager, so I'm sure somebody touched her.
Yeah, that's fair.
It was probably like a film director or something.
Yeah, no big deal.
He's Barry Lyndon and Barry Lyndon. This guy generally just out there being like a real huckster on film, but in this movie, he's toning down his charm, and he's straight-faced, and he's cold, and he's the driver.
I'm the driver.
If you gotta have the driver, you gotta have, like, somebody fighting the driver. You gotta have a bad guy in the movie, and that's the detective, played by Bruce Dern. Bruce Dern's a fucking acting legend.
He's Didn't he
baby
fuck
oil
his
and
daughter?
Blow favorite. He probably fucked a lot of people's daughters. But as far as I know, Laura Dern never got fucked by Bruce Dern.
You know who did fuck Laura Dern? Nick Cage and Wild at Heart.
Oh, yeah. Oh. That's for sure.
Oh, you know I love that
one.
It's
all over the place. They were doing a lot of dirty shit. Bruce Dern, if you don't know him, he killed John Wayne in The Cowboys.
If you don't know, hold on. If you
called Corey Feldman a meatball in The Birds.
If you don't know who Bruce Dern is, just hit stop.
Yeah.
I've got nothing for you.
Go kill yourself.
I've got nothing for you.
Baby oil and blow favorite. This guy might be like, if we had patron saint Bobby Heenan back when we were a pro wrestling podcast, we might have a patron saint Bruce Dern here.
He's in contention at least.
He's up there. He's in the Fave Five.
One of the things I've dodged my whole career in the last 40 years is that I killed John Wayne.
You didn't just shoot him. It's like you keep shooting him and he falls down and you get up and I can't even imagine what it was like to see that on the screen.
Into a lot of those bars and somebody said, "You killed my buddy." Get over it, buddy. He died of cancer and it was a movie. You know, it's like Laura says in Enlightened in her last show. She says, "I'm just a girl who's over it." You know what I'm saying?
Exactly, yeah.
Isabelle Adjani is playing the player. She's a French actress. She's been nominated for several Academy Awards, but none of that shit matters. The only thing that matters is she got fucked by a Lovecraft monster in probably the greatest horror movie ever filmed, Possession.
Oh.
You ain't seen Possession. Fucking once again.
Ooh.
Pause this podcast. Fix your life.
Ooh.
Ronnie Blakely. Let's wrap it all up. She's final big four character. She's playing The Connection. You might recognize her as a country music sensation Barbara Jean in the Robert Altman film Nashville. If you don't go as far back as Nashville, you'll definitely recognize her as Nancy's mom from A Nightmare on Elm Street, the bitch that gets pulled through the blue fucking door at the end.
No,
turns into a dummy suddenly and gets pulled through that blue door.
I remember Nashville.
So, tagline of this movie, The Driver. To break the driver, the cop was willing to break the law. Apparently, the tagline didn't read the script because he's the detective. He's not the cop.
Well,
give me a break.
You know.
This plot synopsis is coming from IMDb user Tom Zerner. The driver is a specialist in a rare business. He drives getaway cars and robberies. His exceptional talent prevented him from being caught yet. After another successful flight from the police, a self-assured detective makes it his primary goal to catch the driver. He promises remission of punishment to a gang if they help to convict him in a set-up robbery. The driver seeks help from the player to mislead the detective. Now we got a cat-and-mouse movie.
Oh, man.
Let's get this chase going. Into bullet points.
And Jerry Kids. You like that Tom and Jerry Kids? Yeah.
What's that?
90s Fox afternoon cartoon.
Weren't Tom and Jerry already kids? Were they supposed to be like middle-aged men in the original cartoon?
Well, I think they were full grown, so it makes, I mean, you age quicker. So even
if that's true.
Even if Tom was like a 3-year-old cat, that'd make him like 17,
I just don't see how making them like tiny children of animals would make that setup any better.
I didn't really
watch
it. What's
that add to the show, man?
I don't know.
Just conceptually, it sounds like it's trying to be a ripoff of Muppet Babies, quite frankly.
Yeah, there's a lot of those, you know, Looney Tunes,
baby Flintstones for a while.
Oh, yeah.
All the classic characters became babies at some
point.
Oh, and
then
they had
the Scooby-Doo kids. There was a kids one of that.
I don't remember that one either. Yeah. What the fuck? What was that trend in cartoons?
Yeah.
Thankfully.
Weird.
Ren and Stimpy came along and swept all that shit off the table.
I'm going to start the trend of making...
like a cleansing rain.
Kids versions of successful movies.
Oh,
it's the driver kids.
Sure, that'd be great.
Ooh.
I'd watch RoboCop Kid. RoboKid.
I really like the idea of Kid Bruce Dern. That's a character.
Kid John McClane?
Yeah. Hell yeah.
Shake him awake under like the swings. Yeah. He's all loaded up on juice boxes.
You know if I like any
Recess
kind of,
is over, Kid John McClane.
If I like any kind of alternative diehard, it's Paul Blart Mall Cop. You know that about me. He fights crime. There's crime in this film.
Mm-hmm.
It's the driver. We're starting right away.
This movie is almost singularly obsessed with crime, I would say.
And we start right out the gate with a crime.
Yeah. It's a robbery and then a big chase.
Yeah. Well, you forgot another crime, a carjacking.
Okay, yeah.
Because he steals the car.
He's stealing all these cars.
Then the robbery
this guy's
happens.
A master of stealing cars.
Then the chase.
Start off robbing a casino? Is that where they were at?
Yeah. It was a shitty little casino.
You first get Miss Ajani in there as the player. She's in the midst of this robbery.
It's just a great setup. Drive. Is that the one of the Ryan Gosling?
Yeah.
Yeah. They kind of stole it.
Winding Refn, their first opening scene's basically this.
Yeah.
Completely redone.
Yeah.
Completely ripped off.
Pretty much. And then the same thing for Baby Driver.
Yeah. We set up that the driver here is
a
real
good
pro,
driver.
Man. He's a pro. He's these people he's driving for. They get in the car late, so he's seen by a couple people. He didn't want to be seen. They were supposed to be there early, so he's like, fuck you guys, like, I did my job, you blew it on your job, we're not working together anymore, yeah. And you're like, this guy's fucking cutthroat, he's a professional, he's never been caught, he will never be caught, I challenge any cop out there to try to catch him, they can't because he's too good at driving, what he does, like, give me a break. And this opening chase scene, though, is my first bullet point, is just, instantly, you're just like, whoa, this movie's fucking great, because this is probably the best shot chase scene fucking of all time. You take that Steve McQueen and bullet and you stick it in the toilet and you poop on it. I like this better.
Well, I'm not gonna poo-poo Steve McQueen.
Gonna poop
bullet.
All over Steve McQueen, right on his chest.
Well, I'm gonna also say that this is what, 10 years later?
Yeah, we got some time in between that.
So things have changed a little bit, and you know, somebody lays the groundwork and it's a lot easier to perfect.
Old boy was on the set during all those bullet chases, just learning. Walter Hill just learning, soaking it all in.
And that's what I mean. Like, I'm never going to poo-poo Bullet, because before Bullet, like, shit.
Mm-hmm.
There's no such thing as a car chase as we now know it in film history.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
But this...
seminal.
This movie does an amazing job.
Semen. Semen-like.
Yeah. Instead of just, you know, doing exactly what Bullet did, it... finds a way to make improvements, and I really liked some of the choice camera work they did with like the mounting of the
killer,
cameras,
man.
On the front of the car.
We got like point of view shots where you are the car barreling down the street.
Yeah.
We got point of view shots behind the car where you're seeing what's trailing you. And then he'll just sit the camera like far, far away from where the chase is happening, just still shot, and you just see the fucking cars rocketing towards you. Like, you keep juxtaposing back and forth between those way pulled back long shots, and then just a boom, suddenly you're back in the fucking car. It gives it a real frantic fucking feeling to it.
It's,
you don't know where you are, where you're going to be in the next fucking minute. Just, you're getting shot back here, then shot back in the car.
It's cool, because I know you're not a fan of the sport, nor am I, but if you ever caught it on TV for a couple of seconds, every single trick that he uses in this car chase, they literally use in film or in telecasting NASCAR.
Oh, so that's got to be less thrilling though, because these fucking chases are taking twists and turns. They're going through parking lots and over curbs.
Yeah.
And NASCAR, they're just going around in the same circle over and over and over again. I don't even know why you'd need those point of view shots.
But it's just funny and it's interesting. Like, the guy takes...
we've got the most boring sport ever conceived of. How are we going to try to make this visually interesting for people?
Make it look like that car chase and the driver.
Cameras everywhere.
But it fucking works, and clearly it transcended film and, you know, crossed over into other aspects there.
Yeah, so thrilling, but also... spatial relations, geography, always on point. We're never losing track of where this car
that
the driver's driving is in relation to the cop cars that are chasing him.
And that's including like 360 spinouts and shit.
Oh, for sure. For fucking sure.
It's a really good point.
Editing's on point. You never lose.
The choreography's all on point.
They had to have had this whole thing storyboarded out and just meticulously planned. Another thing super impressive to me is just how many ancillary cars are on the street while this shit's getting shot.
Yeah.
It's not just like empty streets.
No.
His car and the cop cars. It looks like they just fucking guerrilla style shot this shit,
yeah,
like without permits, like out in real populated streets that weren't blocked off,
like you get
putting everyone's lives in severe danger.
You get car chases in other movies and like there's the cute like, oh, this car came out of nowhere, mm-hmm, watch out now.
That happens like every fucking
right
3/4 of a second in this car chase.
Just,
there's just cars,
there's just
everywhere.
Traffic everywhere, like they're just weaving in and out
had
of cars
to have been so many stunt drivers just like so meticulously like just like on point for their cues,
right,
and everybody doing everything at the exact
like
right moment.
Timing. Like,
I mean, for what I understand, Walter Hill says that this is the car chase that he didn't quite get right, because I think somebody did die either died or got seriously hurt, like,
yeah,
somebody,
you know,
doing like some electric rigging fell or something.
You
so,
know, you're gonna make an omelet,
yeah,
yada yada yada,
you gotta break a few skulls if you,
yeah,
want to make an omelet,
yeah.
But this is dangerous as fuck, and you could tell by watching it, and it's
danger
just thrilling
is cool.
Another
chicks
thing
love danger
that I kind of like about it is you're seeing it all from the driver's perspective. Like, you're never in the cop cars with the cops. You're never hearing any audio from, like,
yeah,
their radios crackling and them,
oh,
talking to each other.
I got
other.
A
like,
blue car.
There's no chopper
him
above them. Like, yeah, oh, we got, he's going south on blah, blah, blah. So it really feels just like a fox hunt where just, like, he's trying to outwit these guys, and they're just like these silent, slinking predators out there.
Right.
It's just like a real animal thing.
It makes it, it gives it that thriller, horror feeling to it,
yeah,
where it's just like, oh, he's getting chased by the boogeyman. Like,
yeah,
is he,
yeah,
going to get away? Is he going to get away?
It kind of does have a lot more like in common of horror movie chases than it does,
right,
like an action movie chase. There's no loud noises everywhere, everything trying to distract you. It's,
yeah,
you're focused on where he's going, why he's going there, what he's doing to try and get away from these cops.
None of that cute shit like, ooh, he's so cool, did you see that move? It's, you don't even have time for that. It's just,
mm-hmm,
hard-ass driving. And he is cool, and he's doing cool driving, but like,
but stone-faced
you're
the
just,
whole time and just in,
yeah,
full concentration.
And you're right there with him. You don't even have time to think, like, this is really cool. Like, there, of course, there's a couple times where you're like, oh, shit. Oh, snap. That was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
But like, you're just totally along for the ride in the moment.
I don't know. Walter Hill says that this chase didn't come off the way he did, and he wasn't able to get the final shots he wanted to. It was supposed to end more spectacularly, but this might be my favorite fucking car chase ever. Like, I fucking love it. Like, if he had something else planned, good God, it would. Maybe this movie would have made some money.
Yeah, maybe. So you get the driver out of the way, you get the cars out of the way.
Mm-hmm.
Now we get the best part of the movie.
Just Bruce Dern talking
Bruce
to people like a
fucking
prick. This fucking
Dern
cocksucker Bruce Dern.
Like, the whole time he's talking, like, you can't get a feel for this guy. Like, you're like, is he a good detective or is he just full of shit?
Mm-hmm.
Is he a tough guy or is he a fucking sleazo?
He's great.
You know?
Like, bullet point I had in here is just the performances and how they work together. He's a great raging yang to Ryan O'Neill's sober yin, because this guy's Ryan O'Neill's cold as ice. He's expressionless. He goes through this
cold
whole movie like a ghost.
Ice.
Bruce Dern's skin's boiling because he's,
mm-hmm,
just so fucking agitated and angry in every single second he's on screen in this thing. He's the polar opposite of the driver, the detective. He's irritated. He's agitated. He's mean to everyone around him. He's constantly at the edge of his seat, tapping his fucking foot.
He's like a not as drunk Rick Sanchez.
Super intense. These guys, they're kind of like a opposite sides of the same coin thing, because they're both singularly obsessed with what they do.
Yeah.
Him getting away and the detective catching him.
Yeah.
You get a classic fucking Roadrunner Wile E. Coyote dynamic here.
Correct.
Planning on looking for work, son? My line of work is kind of hard to come by.
Depends on where you look.
Depends on who you are.
I don't know. Some of the criminal types these days, they Think that they're real cowboys. Think that they can just drive around, do whatever they want to do, whenever they want to do it. I respect a man that's good at what he does. I'll tell you something else. I'm very good at what I do. Now, last night... Oh, I forgot. His memory's not too good about last night.
I remember everything.
Alone in your room?
Yeah.
You can do better than that.
I don't have to.
Go ahead, throw it! It'll cost you 2 years.
Go on.
You want to throw it? Go on. Go on.
Go on. Now, you know what I'm gonna do? I'm gonna catch the cowboy that's never been caught. Cowboy Desperado. Now, get out of here.
Johnny, she's got a great thousand-yard stare in this. You could tell this bitch has been through some shit.
Oh, the player, Johnny?
Yeah, all she's got to do is be around and look pretty and sad. And I'm here for her.
Gee, she was a little rough for me to get through.
You're not a big fan of Isabella Johnny? Quite the dish, in my opinion.
I mean, she's an attractive young lady, but when it starts, sometimes you get that performance where it's like, oh, are you foreign or are you just some kind of slow?
Definitely foreign. This was her first attempt at a Hollywood picture.
Yeah.
Much more comfortable speaking French in films.
Yeah. Nothing about this performance screamed comfortable to me.
Ooh, I think that was all part of it. I think this is a chick with a past who's been torn in between just all these whims of stupid men her whole life. She's seen a bunch of terrible shit. She's been through a bunch of terrible shit and She's in the middle of it just trying to survive.
I meant uncomfortable as in me having to watch her act.
Well, that's insane. She's an amazing actress. I think you're just racist.
No, man.
She don't speak the English good. Get her out of my Hollywood movies.
I don't mind. I don't mind the attractive, foreign, sultry whatever, but like... there was a couple times, a couple lines she delivered where I was just like, that was the best take they got.
Well, she blames this movie for ruining her career. She says that she never got another good offer from a Hollywood movie.
I think some other people saw what I saw.
Well, I don't know, 1981, she was in Possession. It's a English language film, but I guess it was filmed in Berlin. Who knows who funded it? And Possession is fucking awesome.
Yep, that's fair. But that's... for a different list of reasons altogether.
So the storytelling here, this is another bullet point I want to bring up. Because there is none.
No.
There's no story here whatsoever. No. This is the leanest, meanest fucking just action movie you're ever going to see.
Figure it out as it goes.
They explain nothing. You've got no idea like how the driver is like finding these people to work with, how they contact him. I mean, they go through The Connection, the other big female character in this. But like, how's her phone number out there? Like, how are these? No, you don't know. It's just like,
how did he get mixed up with her in the first place?
We need
place?
To have another job coming up, so we're showing the next job. The detective, how has he gotten on the trail of the driver? How does he kind of know who he is?
Clues are boring.
It happened in the past. Catch up. Like, we're in the middle of a chase here. There's no time to stop and explain any of this shit to you. And I love it because the movie, it fucking moves, and I'm told enough to where I can get invested in it, mostly because just Dern and O'Neill going back and forth, or not really going back and forth. O'Neill's sitting there while Dern just fucking pukes dialogue all over him is enough to get me invested in these two guys. It's a simple fucking push and pull, like these guys are button heads. Who's gonna win? That's all I need to be invested. So I guess we just go through chases. The middle chase sequence. Another great thing. So we got Bruce Dern. He sets up an illegal sting. This man's unscrupulous. He's got to fight. He's got to get the driver. He's got to lock him up. So he's gonna set him up.
He also has this clearly undercover surveillance van that he cruises around in the entire movie. Uh-huh. That's like his mobile HQ.
Oh, yeah. Dern's not getting involved in any of this action. He's not like jumping in the car and chasing him. He's always sitting back.
Fuck that.
He's like listening to shit on a radio. He's drinking soda pops in the back of his fucking A-team van.
It's
just like
stupid if he's chasing him every time, because then you're like, he's never going to get him. This is dumb.
If this was,
he didn't get him at the end? I knew that because he failed to.
If this was an 80s action movie, these guys would literally be chasing each other like that. Like, they'd both be in muscle cars. Like,
which is just dumb.
That's not what this is. This is a 70s action movie.
He's got the plain clothes.
Ugly, weird guys can just sit around doing nothing, and it's still fucking cool.
So he's got the old, you know, the uniforms, the flatfoots chasing around. The bad guys.
Like, people he can belittle and just act more important than, talk down to them.
And say things like, maybe you're a fruiter.
we weren't yet politically correct here in 1978.
I'm not about the bashing of homosexuals, or anyone for that matter, but, you know, sometimes a funny line's a funny line.
That's true. You got Bruce Dern delivering your homophobia every once in a while. He's going to get a
You got something to hide? Maybe you're a fruiter.
We get a couple of incompetent robbers who try to rob a fucking supermarket. They get caught because they suck. These are the guys that Bruce Dern
shoot
them like,
up, guys.
We're gonna cut a deal for you here. Like, you guys are gonna do another job. It's gonna be a bank robbery. You're gonna hire this guy, the driver, who I've been trying to catch. I couldn't catch him last time.
You're gonna hire the cowboy.
Because Isabella Johnny, she got paid off to not finger him in that lineup, even though she saw him in the beginning, because the dudes he was working for got there late.
Even though he fingered her.
He tried to do some fingering later.
Yeah.
And we don't get it on camera, which is a bummer.
It is.
So this is our big setup. This is what's going into the second half of this movie. These guys are trying to hire the driver, set him up, and then they won't have to go to jail if Bruce Dern can get his man. When they go to hire him, we get this fucking chase. It's not even a chase sequence. It involves one car in a car fucking lot, a parking garage. They roll in with this fucking flare-ass orange Mercedes, and they're like, we want to hire you. And
look at this. We're a badass gang. We're like the mod squad.
He's like, oh, well, you know, it costs a lot of money to hire me. I'm the best. And they're like, how do we know that you're the best? So then he's like, get in this orange Mercedes with me. And then he just drives like a fucking insane person, doing donuts and loop-de-loops in this parking garage, destroying every inch of this fucking car they're in.
He doesn't destroy it at all. He's like driving like meticulously clean.
Precision destroying it.
He's not damaging it at all. And then all of a sudden the one guy's like, all right, that's enough. You're fucking crazy. Mm-hmm. And then he's like, oh, I'm sorry. You want to see crazy? And that's when he starts smashing up the car.
I don't like these guys. I'm not going to work for them. Yeah. And I'm going to show them that I'm not going to work with them by just destroying their fucking Mercedes. So everybody in
the car.
But
I like that he waited until he was like, oh, you think that's crazy? I'm going to one-up that for you,
he's
pal.
He's so precise with how he destroys it. Like, I'm going to scrape this against this wall. Then I'm going to scrape the other side against the wall. And I'm going to come back here and
crowbar
an insane
this
speed
bumper off.
And fucking, just fucking head first crash into this wall. But he's so precise with it that he manages to destroy the entire car, total every inch of it, but not hurt anybody on the inside.
Correct.
He's like a surgeon with this fucking thing. And once again, this had to have just been amazing stunt driving and amazing planning. I just can't even fathom how this whole fucking sequence is put together.
I
could just watch this thing on a loop over and over again.
It's no movie magic. I mean, you're literally watching somebody literally doing that scene.
That's what's
with
so
that
great
car.
About this. Like, these are real cars really crashing into things. Unlike when you're watching modern movies, you're never just like doing that math in your head of just like, all right, when did this real car turn into the computer car?
Vin Diesel.
What's real here and what's fake?
Did a triple kick flip in his Dodge Charger over a oil tanker and then landed on four wheels.
You don't have a fucking Keanu Reeves in a passenger bus jumping a ramp 3 football fields. It's real shit. You can't fake anything because we're using real cars, real stunt people, real fucking physics.
Real cool physics.
There's nothing better than just watching this shit from the 70s. Stunt work was a big draw. Fucking stunt shows is a thing people go to. People don't go out and sit and see animators animate things. No, we want to see stunts, real people, in real peril.
Stunt work was so cool. Burt Reynolds made a fucking action movie mm-hmm. about being a stuntman.
Oh, yeah. We're going to have to do a Burt Reynolds month at some
point.
Yeah,
I think
we're
so.
Gonna...
That's the second Burt Reynolds reference we've made.
We need to.
It's happening.
We need to get that going.
Yeah. Or pick some deep cuts for you folks.
If I got any sort of qualms with this movie, any complaints, it does kind of come after here, though, when we're trying to set all the pieces in place for the big finish where they're going back and forth like, oh, I'm not going to work for you. I'm going to work for you. And then we get this money that's put in the locker, mm-hmm. and we're going to launder this money, and the cops know about it. The driver knows about it. Everybody's in this bus station where the money's in the locker, and the setup's about to happen, and it slows down a little bit. There's a stretch here where there's not a chase happening in the movie, and it's kind of a bummer. But it is cool, and we actually do get the robbery, and there's an attempted double cross.
Yep.
The main dude just like, all right, I got a gun on you, the driver. Now I was supposed to take you to the cops, but instead of doing it, I took you to a different location.
Yeah.
Those guys all have their dicks in their hands, and now I got this money, and I'm just going to take off with it.
And there's nothing you can do about it because you don't like guns.
You famously don't carry a gun, you idiot. And that's a fucking badass scene. You don't realize that O'Neill's got a gun in his hand the whole time, and he just shoots through a fucking car door, through the fucking window, blows this guy away. His expression doesn't change the whole time. Calm, cool, walks over, gets the big fucking suitcase of money from the bank robbery, gets in his bitchin' red truck, drives away.
Mm-hmm.
There's a real cool shot there. I like when he's driving the truck away, too. He's like in some sort of like fucking industrial zone or whatever, going down this back alley, and we get a shot going through the back window of the truck as he drives. But the window is not taken out of the car. You can see still the reflection in the window. So you see what's behind you over the top of where we're going in the front. And it's just like, it's very pretty. It's all just motion going and all. Yeah. It's just like the driver. He's got the road behind him. He's got the road in front of him. He's always driving.
That's it.
Great camera
always
work.
Always forward, never backwards.
Some more great camera work in this fucking thing.
Yeah, yeah. What comes up after that? So
he's got to launder this money.
Yeah.
He goes to the connection.
Yep.
The connection eventually gets fingered by one of these fucking goons. He goes and is like, where's he going to take the money? She gives him up, then gets her fucking head blown off. That's
right.
A pretty brutal scene. But this sets
it
up
really
our final big fucking chase. We got one more big fucking chase in this movie.
Real quick though, with my boy Bruce Dern, the whole time all this stuff's been going on, Bruce Dern's just digging in even deeper with all these baseball analogies, and he's like, you know, you want to be a winner, the only good thing to read is the sports page, winners and losers. You want to be a winner, you stick with me, you're mm-hmm. a loser,
yeah,
but you can be a winner, and this and that. And the younger guy's just kind of like, all right, but the older dude that's with him is like just getting more and more tired of Bruce Dern's shit.
Just tired of his mouth
like,
running.
You're kind of a fucking idiot, aren't you, buddy? And he's just like, you know, no way, dude, I'm a winner.
He's clearly the best at doing this because he keeps telling us that he is.
And there's a real cool scene. I think it's right before that bank robbery
mm-hmm.
where they have a little blow up in the garage and everybody gets in the van. And then Bruce Dern's the last to get in the security van. It's just
that's where they're all drinking beers, and he's just got a bottle of soda pop.
No, that's earlier, but they're in the garage, and like the older cops just like, you know, you're full of shit. And he's like, it is shit. I'll show you shit.
Yeah, yeah.
And they all get in the van, and they pull out of this garage. And it's just this cool shot of like the three of them. It looks like a shot out of the Sabotage video.
Yeah, Bruce Dern's got some amazing late 70s hair going on.
Yeah.
He fucking looks like he could be on his way to see fucking Garfunkel in the park or whatever. But he's just like playing a badass detective, and it works because it's Bruce Dern.
With like, and that's another thing, I just thought of it now that you mentioned it. Like, Ryan O'Neill's just like, cool motherfucker.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, the only thing he's missing is Gosling's white satin coat. But like, he's got his own, he's got his own style going on. You know, he's got like this blue sports coat
sunglasses
he wears, and like,
all the time.
Yeah, like this way button down shirt and like nice stylish jeans and this and that. And he's, you know, he looks like a poor man's Robert Redford, and I mean that in the most complimentary of ways.
Oh, yeah, I'd love for somebody to call me a poor man's Robert
But then
Redford.
On the other side, you got just schlubby detective Bruce Dern with his wild straw hair poking out every which way, and that black polyester suit that just doesn't fit quite right, and like a little loose on the shoulders, and you just, it's such a good clash, like just visually, like just to say, like, these people are the same but could not be more different.
Just watch the subtle little reactions, the smallest little things on O'Neill's faces when he's in those scenes with Dern, and Dern just keeps needling him with that cowboy shit.
Yeah,
cowboy, you think you're going to win this game? And it's like, he does nothing with his face, but like somehow you can still see him reacting to Dern. Like,
it's that's the thing. Like,
so precise with what he's doing with his face.
It's so much because O'Neill reacts to nothing, whereas Dern reacts to everything.
It's just as fucking irritated as he possibly can.
Oh, it's so good.
I don't know. We're getting some homage in Die Hard, maybe, with all the cowboy talk with fucking McClane getting called cowboy over and over again by Hans Gruber, perhaps. I don't know. He's not acting like a cowboy in this. He's not dressed like a cowboy in this. It kind of stood out to me. Like, it's a weird thing to keep throwing at him. Cowboy.
No,
cowboy.
He's the cowboy because he drifts in and out of town.
I mean, yeah.
And he's a loner and he stays by himself.
Man with no name, literally.
Yeah, he's the quiet guy.
Walter Hill's making westerns. He says every movie he makes is a western.
He's carrying a Colt Peacemaker.
I thought he didn't carry a gun.
His gun was dated because he's got an old cowboy gun.
I guess it matches. It's all set up. He's just he's slicker than a cowboy. He doesn't have a dirty face. I think a cowboy's always gonna have a dirty face.
That's fair.
This final fucking chase sequence we get, though, everything goes south in the fucking meetup where they're trying to switch the bad money for clean money. The money launderer fucking makes off. Bruce Dern chases him onto a train, like a passenger train. They end up having a shootout. This guy gets blown away.
And one of the most dangerous stunts in the entire movie, where that guy takes a backward somersault out of a train window, a moving train, and then lands in dirt right next to the train. And like in that little back tumble, like his head comes inches of the wheels moving on the train.
He was a real greasy looking sleazeball too. This guy's what I'm picturing when I'm picturing cowboys.
God, that stunt work, man.
So then we get fucking second banana fucking failed grocery store robber, the same one that blew his connections head off.
Yeah, the anger Hispanic dude.
He runs in when they're trying to get their new clean money that's been laundered, steals the fucking purse out of the player's hands, runs off with it, and then she's like, the driver, he's got my purse with the key to get in the locker where our money is. And then it's like, well, fuck, looks like we got another chase on our hands. Let's get in a car and go chase him.
Great news, honey. I'm really good at driving.
Yeah, so this is super weird, this fucking final chase, because this one's not going through streets for very long. We eventually end in this big warehouse, and then we just have
the dude, old boy, the third bank or third shoot 'em up guy, he gets in a car with the love child of like Benicio del Toro and who's the other guy? He looked like a mix of something. It'll come to me. Okay. Doesn't matter. But he's got his own driver.
Drop it
now.
Right in. We've got the magic of audio editing going on.
He's
right
got his own driver now.
Yeah, he's a young wet behind the ears driver here, but I think he's got some potential.
This guy is a pretty good
driver.
He's
got some moves.
He's got the moves. I'll give you that. Oh, that's not De Niro. That's a walking one.
Yeah.
From The Rundown.
Uh-huh.
You got the moves.
Give me The Rundown.
I'll give you that.
That was from the trailer, wasn't it? That's why I recognized that instantly. That just over and over again when they were advertising that movie.
The Rundown.
They advertised the fuck out of that movie when it was coming out.
Yeah, well, helped make Rock a star. People liked it.
But this thing ends in a warehouse, which is ridiculous, where these guys are just like creeping around in cars in this warehouse, just like driving between pallets and shit, trying to hide from each other. More cat and mouse shit. Totally unique to any fucking car chase that's happened on film up to this point. It's not fucking fast. It's not like that opening one where we're frantically turning down streets and doing 360s. It's slow and it's quiet and they're idling their engines and they're trying to be sneaky and it's still somehow very tense and very cool. And it doesn't feel like something so low key should work as like the big action finale of a movie like this, but I still think it totally worked.
Yeah, it's funny because like it just feels like maybe another part of the movie, but then you look at what time it was, and like mm-hmm. if you're paying attention to runtime and this and that, it's like, well, this has got to be like the end of it. And like, it just, it's weird, but it totally works.
Was this one 85? Was that the runtime? Is it even less than an hour and a half?
I think it's 95.
95, okay. Either way, hovering around that beautiful fucking target we're always trying to hit of a 90-minute movie. Nothing we love better.
91 minutes.
Nothing we love better than a 90-minute movie. That's how you do it.
91 minutes,
get in,
man.
Do it. Get the fuck out.
And it does. It doesn't overstay its welcome. This is your third fucking car chase,
mm-hmm.
but you're still fucking rock hard for it.
Oh, hell yeah.
Because it's not the same fucking chase every time.
Yeah, very little it's action all been in different. This movie. Couple guns get fired, but it's all car
the
chases.
Action is
and
all
that
car.
Should get super repetitive, but
We had gun foo last week. This is complete and total muscle car foo.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's fucking amazing.
So
man.
These guys creep around, hiding from each other, in and out. Finally, O'Neill's just like, I'm going to sit here and be patient and just wait for him to show himself. This is kind of how he always gets one up on everybody. He's just more patient than them, sitting still, rock like a Buddha. Eventually, the dude creeps out. He's like, I got to get out of here.
The great part is, like I said, these are like mostly muscle cars.
Mm-hmm.
Even his fucking like S10 Chevy pickup truck that he's in is fucking muscly. And so what they use well in this whole little cat and mouse where they're like creeping through the warehouse trying to figure out where each other is.
You can almost hear like the Friday the 13th music playing while they're just slowly driving through
right.
the shit.
But it's not the Friday the 13th music. It's just the rumble of the cars that they're all fucking listening for.
Oh yeah,
they stop and they like you can see them like moving their heads about just
real
like
real great sound design
trying to
this,
hear
it feels
just
like.
Ever just a little bit of that.
I really wish there was a Dynamite Blu-ray of this out where you can get like surround sound going. I bet the sound design on this is great. Just like you can tell that it probably is just even on a shitty DVD quality.
Glass back mufflers, everything just popping and screaming and rumbling. Ugh, ballsy. It all sounds ballsy.
So he baits him out. This guy... wet behind the ears.
I like
driver,
how you went from ballsy to Bates. Good work.
Tries to just get out of here real quick. He's like, fuck this, I'm out of here. But then he comes face to face with the driver. So now we got a game of chicken. Ryan O'Neill doesn't lose a game of chicken, man.
No.
He's willing to go all the way. He's willing to die.
Yeah.
To not lose. This movie's all about winning at all costs.
Hell yeah, which I'm a big fan of.
If you're not fucking winning, you're losing. This is
correct.
This is what my dad's told me. Ever since I was born.
If you die, you lose.
Yeah, that's true.
So he's like,
guy
whatever.
Swerves, fucking rockets his car off a ramp. They crash horribly. And then the driver's got him. He rolls up, fucking shoots the one dude. Real casual.
Well, the best part is like...
gets his fucking key back.
Before any of that, though, man, like he rolls the bad dudes and like they like fucking clumsily get out of the car all banged up and beat up. And the main bad guy, like, he looks over to the pickup truck, and he sees the doors open. An old girl's still in the pickup truck, but Ryan O'Neill's clearly gone.
The driver's on the move.
So he's looking around, he's like, I don't see him. Starts moving some more, looking around, I don't see him. And he starts to get that look on his face, like, I think I'm good, like, maybe something happened or whatever. And then, bam, he turns around, and that's when he gets got. Because he's fucking there with his cult peacemaker.
And we get a nice little moment with the young kid who's just like, hey,
I really
man,
appreciated that.
I'm just the driver. I got nothing else to do with this. I'm just the driver. Ryan O'Neill's kind of like, yeah, man, I'm the driver too. I get that. I'm going to let you leave.
Yeah. I'm going to respect you and trust you for what you say you are.
So this kid's just like takes this minute to think about it and just like, oh, fuck, I think he's really going to let me leave.
I'm going to run.
He turns around and runs away. And just like one of the funniest, just like flailing limbs. Like every time you've ever seen like some kid who's not into sports or whatever, is just like dressed like he's going to a punk show and shit all the time.
Yeah.
Try to have to run for some reason. Right. Like it's the exact same run that this fucking punk kid does.
It's like what I imagine our good friend Tom Rock would look like if the cops showed
absolutely.
Up and we had to run.
This is literally probably the first time this kid's ran since he was a small child.
But he does an impressive jump because they're down in that little ditch where their car flipped.
He's got the adrenaline on his side.
And he does an impressive little, you know, mid-run flat jump like 4 feet up into the air and sticks it.
For fucking sure.
So whatchamacallit, he gave Ryan O'Neill the key back.
The key back.
One last little business left.
We got to go back.
Go back to the train station, get that laundered money.
Bruce Dern and all his cops are waiting for him, man.
Those motherfuckers.
They're there. They're standing around just waiting for them to show.
They finally got him.
And Ryan O'Neill, he's like, Bruce Dern, fuck, you got me. Bruce Dern's like, you might as well just get in there, look in that locker, and get your money so we can wrap this whole thing up and I can fucking arrest you. Ryan O'Neill opens up the locker, takes out the suitcase. Dern's all happy and cocky. And he opens it up and there's no money. Ooh, there's no money. There's no crime. This is all an illegal sting going on. You can't pin this on him. You're fucked, Bruce Dern. But also the driver's fucked because he didn't know there was going to be no money there. The fucking launderer guy double-crossed him. Everybody got double-crossed. Everybody loses.
But the driver gets away.
That's true. But he doesn't get rich. Dern tells him at one point, you're making a huge risk here. You win, you get rich. I win, you go away forever.
But if you listen earlier in the movie when he's talking to old girl, he's like, I might even mail the money back. And she points out it was never about the money for you, was it?
It's all about the game.
He doesn't give a fuck
he's
about
the money.
He's a
fucking cowboy.
But that's a great line, though, when he hands the bag back and it's empty. And Bruce Dern's like, it's empty. And O'Neill's like, looks like we all got double-crossed.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of crooks out there.
Bittersweet ending here in this gritty 70s crime movie. You play the game of crime, you know. You're not going to end up happy. You're not going to be happy. Everybody in this movie's fucking miserable.
Everybody's always miserable in these movies,
Do you think you got their, like, ball, Isabella Johnny, after they left, though? That would be a pretty happy
ending. I don't know, because if you look at it, she doesn't even fucking wait for him. She just sees what's going on there, and she's like, oh, it's the fuzz. Cheese
I gotta
it.
Peace out.
And she just leaves. Like, did she go back to the truck, or did she just be like, oh, here's another fucking scumbag?
I think she's bouncing to the next guy. I think she's going from scumbag to scumbag, doing what she has to do
I
to survive.
She saw that because she didn't know that the bag was empty.
She got wrapped up in this whole thing because her last meal ticket stopped paying for her shit. She needed something else, and now she's
probably
taking,
like,
payments from the driver.
He's going to jail. I'm out. So, you know, and then O'Neill just leaves, and then Bruce Dern's like, well, I'm not a cop anymore.
She's like, I'm just going to move to Berlin, get married to Sam Neill.
Sam Neill's a good man.
I hope that our marriage doesn't dissolve in a horrifying metaphor of monster fucking.
No, I don't think it would.
Okay, good.
Yeah, she's good.
Happy ending for everybody, then.
Yeah.
Bruce Dern doesn't have to go down for being a dirty cop. The driver doesn't have to go to jail. She doesn't have to fuck anybody. Everybody can walk away and just continue on with their miserable lives.
And I think Bruce Dern lost, though. Because there was talk about, like, if you don't get him, it's your badge.
Yeah, but he's going to be able to be pissed off about that and just, like, snipe and just be grizzled and angry around everybody around him.
Yeah,
I don't
think
his life's changing much.
That's fair.
After all this driving, I think we've ended in the same place.
Right where we started.
Right where we fucking started.
Yep.
God damn you, 70s. You're so unsatisfying in such a satisfying way.
Absolutely.
All right, well, let's take a break here.
Okay.
We'll see where we're going next in this Walter Hill month-long marathon with a coming attraction, and then the driver enters Judgment Day.
Enjoy these trailers for Alien 3.
Armies of the night.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
The Furies. The Boppers. The Hi-Hats. The Lizzies. The Turnbull ACs. The Gramercy Riffs.
Riffs!
These are the Warriors.
We know about the Warriors. They're a heavy outfit.
They're from Coney Island.
Warriors? You guys are the big dudes, huh?
Now, they're in the Bronx.
We're going back.
27 miles behind enemy lines.
It's the only choice we got.
Between them and safety, stand 20,000 cops and 100,000 sworn enemies.
I want them all. I want all the warriors.
They've got one way out. They've got one chance. They've got one night. The Warriors.
Get out of my dreams.
Oh, wow, yeah.
And into my car.
That's another great fucking driving movie right there. Yeah. License to Drive.
Get in the backseat, baby.
What's who's Billy the
Ocean?
That? Who's
my favorite ocean outside of the Atlantic
Heather Graham,
and the Pacific?
I think in
the Pacific.
In License to Drive.
Yeah, I do
or,
believe.
Or am I thinking about Digstown? Because I know I get a young.
No. I
want to
say that is Heather Graham.
Either way,
that one.
Young Heather Graham was right in my wheelhouse. She was giving me a lot of bones in the late 80s, early 90s, if you catch my drift.
Heather Graham's always in my wheelhouse, no matter what.
Yeah,
even
true.
When I think she's not.
Still looks great.
Even when I think she's not, I'm like, yeah, no, yeah, fuck.
Aging like a fine pair of tits.
She was a Milwaukee native.
Oh, man, I've never seen an attractive girl in Milwaukee. And I've been there like a handful of times.
She's the exception.
She must have just been the queen of that town walking around looking like that in Milwaukee.
Oh, I would assume she got out of there pretty quickly.
Yeah, sure, but if I was her, I would have just stayed there and ruled over everybody. Much rather be a big fish in a small pond. That sounds way better than being like, I'm going to go out to L.A. and be an actress.
Lord it over everybody. Like, you see how...
Lord whatever I can over whoever I can lord something over. It's the best part of life.
It was, yeah, License to Drive, that was
her.
Yeah,
she was looking good.
Yeah.
Young Corey Haim, he's drooling. He didn't have a chance. There was no way.
Yeah, but he was also attractive. I understand why all those studio executive males were fucking him at the time.
Yeah, I think much more,
right?
I think
that's
it was
what
much
happened?
More middle-aged men who were into him than like teenage girls. I don't see too many Corey Haim posters being hung up in young girls' bedrooms. That kid was always just goofy.
Haim? No,
yeah.
The girls liked Haim.
I don't understand it. He was goofy.
Feldman was the dork.
If I was a young girl,
Feldman
I would have
the goof.
My fucking bedroom would have been plastered with Feldman. It would have been Feldman everywhere.
Hey, little girl.
Yeah, he was fucking cool. He had the personality.
Feldman.
You just like him because of the fucking burbs.
No, I like him because of the burbs and because of fucking meatballs and because of shaving his head in Friday the 13th.
Yeah.
He's the coolest.
Yeah, he really did it all.
Judgment Day.
Slept with Michael Jackson.
Judgment Day is where we take the movie we've been discussing and we judge the fuck out of it. And we boil it down to a rating because...
Made Lost Boys 3.
That's what the internet likes. The internet likes to boil everything down to a rating and make it something you can argue over.
It's Donatello.
So what I'm going to do here is what I always do. I've got a couple one bullet. We've got our own trademarked rating system here. That's something we thought about for a real long time. It took us hours to nail down that bullet thing.
Hell yeah.
It's a stroke of genius. I got a couple one bullet reviews.
If there's anything we're doing, it's always stroking. A
couple five bullet reviews from the people out there. I'm going to read them. I'm going to sink them in, let them do what they will in your brain, and then we'll hear where you land. Where you land on this the Driver film.
Nate, who are
the first in our Walter Hill series?
People.
Well, the first people are a guy named Paul Lyons. He's a Letterboxd user, Matt. He's got a one bullet review here of The Driver. He says, "Dour, dull, and depressing. Not exactly ideal qualities for an action thriller. I don't know what the hell The Driver is, was meant to be. Writer-director Walter Hill seemed to be going for some sort of minimalist answer to Bullet in The French Connection, but he failed miserably. Ryan O'Neill plays a bank robbery driver who seems to not make use of any of the dirty money he has made. Instead, he lives in a small room with the door wide open for anyone to walk in. True.
Yeah.
Bruce Dern is the cop out to get the cowboy driver, but he's kind of an idiot and not particularly effective. It's not what he says. He says he's the best. Ronnie Blakely plays a woman who sets up scores for the driver, but she's not very bright. Isabella Gianni is, who the hell knows? Her DOA character makes no sense. The direction is bad, the writing is bad, The acting is bad. The ending is confusing. The only thing the Driver has going for it is that it's not unbearable to watch. It's just not good. One Bullet. Paul Lyons.
He's clearly one of those, like, I really didn't like No Country for Old Men because, like, what was that ending?
Yeah, a lot of people were mad at that ending.
Yeah.
This didn't wrap everything up in a nice little package for me, and I hate it.
You're trying to make me think for myself.
Like poison. Not too many One Bullet reviews out there. People seem to like the Driver. In opposition to how they felt in 1978, Paul Walter Hill. But I do have another 1.5 bullet review.
Mm.
This one. These are all coming from Letterboxd this
week. We'll allow it.
I think this is too much of a thinking man's movie for the other platforms. Not much going on Amazon. Not much going on IMDb. Not much discussion. I'm relying on Letterboxd. This is where you're finding the real cinephiles. Andy Fritz from Letterboxd says, Getaway Driver movies are usually pretty cool. But this one was just so 70s. One Bullet from Andy Fritz. Not a fan of that slow, dirty 70s.
Okay.
Got a couple of 5 bullet reviews. There was a lot of them out here. Right. A lot of internet love for the Driver. I don't know if that convinces you one way or another. You want to side with the internet or not. Here we go. Hmm. 5 bullet review from Letterboxd user Rancho Tuvu. Dark, moody, and taciturn, with the kind of cinematography that made the 70s famous. 70s are so famous. With Walter Hill directing Ryan O'Neill to deliver the lines the way Hill had in mind when he wrote the screenplay. Talk about a Walter Hill film, this is it, written and directed. And I think he kept the style of the Driver when he made The Warriors in 1979. A lot of the lines could fit in either film, and Hill told Michael Beck, War Chief of the Warriors, to watch O'Neill in The Driver. At least I'll bet you that's what he did.
Wow.
It sounded like he had a little story there, but it turns out
not. Ah, I fucking made that up.
I don't work with guys like you. Say it like Beck and it comes out like O'Neill. So the acting is so damn straightforward with the camera on the eyes, like John Ford said to do. The Driver rocks out in so many ways, but Hill wove them together into the proverbial fucking seamless masterpiece. Bruce Dern was on another planet anyway, before he ever got the Driver. He calls everyone an asshole better than anyone. You're an asshole, but you could be a winner.
That's true.
I just felt kind of sad to see the beautiful orange Mercedes, a color which fits the film's overall template, get demolished. But that's the price of great art. 5 bullets.
I'd give that review like 2 bullets.
I'd go 2.5 bullets on that review. Yeah.
I mean, the enthusiasm was
there.
It's got
a nice little insight there. Bruce Dern calls someone an asshole right. Better than anybody.
Yeah, that
bad.
Part's good.
This one is a 5 bullet review from Letterboxd user Nina Wilder.
Ooh.
Nina says, there's a certain kind of movie that really revs my engine. No pun intended. And this is one of those movies.
Ooh.
5 bullets from Nina Wilder.
Oh, I give that review 5 bullets.
It's like The Driver. It's simple, to the point, gets in, does its pun, its engine revving pun, and gets right the fuck out.
I mean, you just send me a link.
5 bullets. You want to see Nina Wilder's
stock
profile picture?
I'm going to find out more.
It's very promising. I'm going to tell you right now. I checked out her profile. Very promising.
Baby.
Let's get into your final thoughts and your bullet review of The Driver, Matthew.
Baby. I wish
move this along.
Nina Anji Melina Rahat
Isabella Johnny.
That's the one. I wish that I liked her as much as I liked Nina Wilder.
Okay.
She didn't quite click for me, and it was slow going for me.
Hats.
With
a lot of hiding under floppy hats.
It was slow going for me with Mr. O'Neill as well at first.
Ooh, I came in a Ryan O'Neill fan.
Love
that Paper Moon.
It took me a second, but by the end of it, it worked for me.
Ooh, one over.
I just liked that
it's
ending
been
of
one over.
Like I said, I don't think she stuck around for his ass.
No, I don't think so.
I think she was just like, well, there goes another one.
No money in my pocket.
Back to 22-year-old scumbagging for me.
Find a new mark.
And so she left and did her thing, and O'Neill was like, oh, I'm just going
to go back to that sad room with the door
doing
open.
Doing whatever. And
maybe he left the door open like college kids do dorm rooms because he was lonely. He
could
was just
be.
Like looking for
could
somebody
be.
To hang out with.
Could be. They worked. I was, like I said, a little hesitant at first, but they won me over towards the end. We talked about how fucking cool O'Neill always looks and how clean and whatever, but everywhere he stays doesn't look like that.
Filthy fucking environments in this movie.
I really liked him renting that $5 hotel and then bringing that warm sixer of Coors and just putting it down on the ground in another room.
I always think about, like, if I had to time travel back to the 70s, how I would handle, like, everywhere you go to drink, all there is just, like, Jim Beam and domestic beer. And just, like, there's no cocktails or, like, any fucking fine spirits or any fucking craft beers. It'd just be like, oh, the 70s, I'm drinking piss.
Yeah.
Yeah. It'd be worse than, like, going back to before there was, like, electricity and shit.
We'd have to go, like, 79, 70s, because at least, like, Wild Turkey starts getting mentioned a lot.
Yeah, there's a lot of Wild Turkey in 70s films, especially, like, 70s fucking trucker movies.
Yeah.
You see a lot of Wild Turkey in that fucking shit.
We'd be
product
okay.
Product placement.
We'd be all right there. What the movie does really well is two things, and that's car chases and Bruce Dern.
I'll agree with that.
And they're really, really good at that. I debated on which way I wanted to go. I think I'm going to go the higher of the two. I'm going to give it a solid.
Generous.
I'm going to give it a solid 4 bullets.
4 bullets. I didn't think you were going to go that high.
I was torn, but it's sticking with me. But again, Bruce Dern is just so much.
Patron saint. You could
just
blow.
You could just watch this movie Mr. for Dern. Car chases and anything Bruce Dern says, and then who even cares if there is a plot to the movie?
I agree wholeheartedly. Lean, mean machine. This is three car fucking sequences and a couple scenes of Bruce Dern showing off in between being a miserable prick. This is basically like a fucking... I'm sure this script read like a fucking Hemingway story. There's got to be so few words in it. There's so few fucking dialogue, so little dialogue in this thing. Just beautiful in its simplicity. It's a personal favorite of mine.
Driver says 350 words in this movie.
Filmmaking is off the chain. Camera work, next level. I'm going 4 bullets as well. We're holding hands right here.
Yeah.
Walking off into the sunset while things explode behind us.
Or just... going our separate ways, because maybe one of us ducked out when the cops showed up.
It's probably true. Cops show up, I'm jumping out the nearest window.
Yeah.
Next week, I think it'll be an interesting juxtaposition. We're moving on to our next Walter Hill film, The Warriors, a film that's quite a bit messier than The Driver. So it'll be interesting to put them up against each other, I feel like.
If I were to remake that movie today, I'd have Adam Sandler be that guy that says that.
That'd be perfect.
Warriors,
he would fucking knock it out of the park. It'd be a perfect change. One thing I wouldn't change, all the chicks in it still wearing no bras.
Duh.
Absolutely.
Because it's fucking baby oil and blow, and like we always say, stay single.
It's a long road when you're on your own, and it hurts when they tear your dreams apart. And every new town just seems to bring you down, trying to find peace of mind can break your heart. It's so use a friend where the road ends. That's the place for me, where I'm me in my own space, where I'm free. That's the place.